Good afternoon. Today is Wednesday. No, it's not. It's Monday. Go ahead, Dave. You keep playing with the microphone. I'll see if it, you know, what month it is. Okay, we're happy. Okay. It is April. It is the 20th. And it is a Monday. 111th day of the new year. Joining us this afternoon from Redwood Capital Bank. Now, okay, I don't have a name for you, do I? That's all right. Jennifer Budwig.
We'll go with that.
Just simple, just easy.
That'll work.
All right. Well, I kind of almost stepped into something there, didn't I?
Way to catch yourself, Brian.
Yeah. At least I'm not trying to explain it to those who didn't get it. Got a couple different things we can talk. You okay over there, Damien?
Yeah, kind of.
Doing a little stretching there, I guess, his workout at lunchtime was a little too strenuous for us all. We'll spend a little bit of time talking about the cost of money, I guess, is the general thing, whether it's for a loan or whether it's for whatever you may be needing the money for. We are hearing a little bit of upticks going on nationally, and we'll talk about what that may mean and what it may not mean when we come back.
Best Spanish language station on the North Coast is Juan 790. Tune in to 790 AM for great music, sports from ESPN, and CNN News en Español. If you're a business owner, ask Juan to connect you with the Spanish-speaking community. You'll be glad you did. Visit Juan online at juan790.com or give us a call at 442-5744. Juan 790, tocando lo que le gusta.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 3:12. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Jennifer Budwig. But before we do, let's see if we can find a quote here. Retirement? Ah, here we go. 1970 in the book, The Coming of Age, Simone de Beauvoir. Quote, retirement may be looked upon either as a prolonged holiday or as rejection of being thrown on the scrap heap. I would think, it's stirred around a little bit. I would think for a lot of folks, retirement is more challenging than working. When you guys are doing some of your discussions with folks and the loans and all that sort of thing, or the investment opportunities that folks have, do you talk to them about the lifestyle elements? You know, where are you going to be in 15 years? Where are you going to be in 20 years? What does that look like to you? And try to gear and shape things towards that? Or is it money, money, payment, payment, thank you very much, don't let the door hit you?
Well, I think...
We appreciate you as a customer.
And all that good stuff.
Yeah.
Well, I think the piece that where we'd have some kind of a conversation around that would be in discussions with a business customer, maybe about like exit strategy, so from the standpoint of how long are you thinking you're wanting to own the business, and when you're wanting to depart from the business, what's your plan? Are you thinking that you're going to sell it? Are you thinking that, you've got a succession plan in place where maybe you've got some employees that are wanting to purchase it? Do you have a child who's going to want to buy it? When are you thinking you're going to want to sell it? Things of that nature. So I would say that it would revolve more around that area of it. At the bank, we don't have an investment department. And so if we did, I would think that would be a little bit more tuned into like a financial advisor, as far as sitting down with someone and saying, okay, and you want to retire in 10 years, this is what you're going to need to be looking at.
Or let's say somebody who is our age.
Uh-huh.
Taking out a 30-year note for a house.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so if we just do the normal life expectancy charts, you got 1 foot in. I'm standing both feet in squarely. Okay. Does that influence how the note is? Or maybe you say, well, if you want a 30-year, but a 15 would be okay because of the fact you're going to be, at this age at the end of the term.
It doesn't play into it.
Really?
It really can't, because it would be probably viewed as an age could potentially be considered an age discrimination.
Yeah, but if on average I'm going to be dead 5 years before the note's paid off,
uh-huh.
that doesn't sound like a prudent loan to make. And I would think then you start, saying no to people who are 60 or 55 or 50 because the actuarial charts show that they're not going to be around at the end. And you might have the age discrimination, but it would be not giving them...
The other way.
Yeah, 180 degrees.
Right. Well, depending upon the kind of loan you're talking about, so there's very specific parameters that we have to follow from a regulatory standpoint in regards to there's just certain things we can and cannot do, which are much more stringent around like the residential real estate world and the consumer world. And so versus commercial, we have a little bit more latitude and flexibility in that regard. But that's where I would say those, you know, maybe succession planning questions would come into play. So if you have someone who's a little bit older and they are looking for a 25-year loan, then, no, we typically aren't going to say that, well, we think you've got a 10-year life expectancy left. Therefore, it's a 7-year loan now. Yeah. So we don't go down that road. But what we would want to do is have that conversation, you know, in terms of what are your plans and do you have a trust set up and, you know, who are the...
So general broad strokes rather than granular.
Exactly. Yes.
Boy, you know, if I was answering, this would be such a really long program.
So what do you feel about that, Brian? Yeah, what are your thoughts?
It's too late to turn it now. But it's always been a question of mine. You know, why would somebody give someone who is not elderly necessarily, but close, a long-term note? I just wouldn't.
Well, sometimes,
unless it's something that's written into the will or a successor or something like that, that the lending institution is covered.
Well, I think part of it, too, is the longer the note, the lower the payment. And so sometimes you just have instances where, from a qualification standpoint, they have to have the lower payment to actually qualify, especially if you're dealing more with debt-to-income ratios and things like that. So there might be times when, I mean, we've had customers where, to get them to qualify, they have to go with that longer amortization period, but they... You know, what we'll tell them is okay, if you were to pay, you know, XYZ on this, you'd actually have the loan paid off in 15 years versus 30, and so they pay that higher amount.
You just accelerate the buy down.
Yeah, they choose to do it that way. So that's, you know, certainly their prerogative to do that.
What does that do to your credit report? I mean, if you've got a 30, you pay it off in 12.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make you look like a champ?
Not really. It just shows you paid. I mean, it's a lot better than if you don't pay the loan.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. No, but what it would show is that you've paid the loan as agreed, you know, that you've complied with the loan parameters and that you don't have any derogatory. So it's beneficial from the standpoint of, you know, no negatives on your credit report, but you don't get bonus points for having paid it off early.
No brownie points either?
No brownie points. Huh. But we'd love to see that you paid as agreed.
Yeah,
that's a
tough,
really great thing.
Tough. I'll just go out and buy brownies. Are there new kinds of loans that are available now that haven't been in the past?
Well, you know, it's interesting you would ask that question because, I mean, we certainly saw the pendulum swing significantly in 2007, 2008 when the financial meltdown happened. I would say it's been pretty consistent in the commercial world. So I would say business loans haven't really shifted that much. There's been a few programs that have rolled out, like through SBA, but they've been pretty minor. But over, you know, even during that whole time period, I wouldn't say that there were really significant shifts there. But in the residential real estate world, I would say that that's probably where we've seen the changes, you know, from the standpoint of going from being super, super conservative to very, very liberal, back to very, very conservative.
It's 319.
What could we do as a community to make Humboldt a better place to work and live? The answer is to make sure our kids are literate, able to plan financially, move forward in their education so they are better prepared to enter our workforce, and become contributing and productive members in our society, community, and economy. How do we do it? Through the Decade of Difference Initiative. Visit decadeofdifference.org and find out how you, as a parent, student, or business owner, can help. It's the Decade of Difference. Be part of it.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Times, 324. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Jennifer Budwig. Jennifer, the cost of money. I know John has spent a couple of different shows trying to get my head wrapped around the cost of money. okay, and we've got this and we've got that. When it starts to increase, I think it's difficult still for a lot of us non-financial folks to go, wait a minute, the economy is good, so now it's going to cost us more money. Huh? Why are we being penalized for a better economy? And conversely, why are we being penalized if the economy is going in the tank? Higher requirements, all that kind of stuff. Is there an overriding, big kumbaya about how money is perceived by the regulators, by the government, and how we can anticipate what's going on and why things are the way that they are?
Well, when you say the way that they are you talking about like why rates have been as low as they have for the last 6 to 7 years?
Yeah, we have been hearing the last 2 or 3 years we're out of the recession.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the economy's rebounding, blah, blah, blah. And yet we've got zero cost money, mm-hmm. the equivalent of that. Well, mm-hmm. if things were going great guns,
mm-hmm.
they'd be up to keep inflation down. Well, so it staying where it was doesn't seem to make an awful lot of sense.
Right.
I mean,
I think they're always going to weigh that out and really look at, okay, the economy is getting better, but it hasn't gotten to the point where it's so good that they're comfortable increasing rates because, yeah, the idea is that if you start to see inflation, you increase rates accordingly to offset some of that potential growth. And I don't think that they've been comfortable enough, that they feel that the economy has gotten so good that an increase in rates would be a negative connotation. And so we've been hearing this for the last 3 years, that the beginning of the year, they keep saying, oh, we're going to be looking at a rate increase over the next year. We're going to be looking at a rate increase over the next year. This time, I do think they probably mean it from the standpoint of, it sounds like there's a pretty good possibility in June we may be looking at like a 0.25% increase. So that may happen. But the thing is that they can't increase it a lot, and they can't increase it really, really fast because it will kill the economy. You know, so I'd be surprised if they don't.
Well, it is an election year, too.
Yeah.
Coming up, so I mean, that,
and all that plays into
it.
Absolutely. Yeah. Oh, no, absolutely. That all does play into it. And so, you know, so I would be surprised if we don't probably see maybe a 0.25% bump this year. But I just can't imagine that it's going to be anything really significant because, you know, we're not sailing. I mean, you know, we might be a little bit better.
Better doesn't mean good.
Better doesn't mean great.
So it could be less worse.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good way to put it. It's less worse, which is great. But the bottom line is that I don't think there's anyone that feels like we're, you know, really out of the neck of the woods from, or out of the woods, I should say, in regards to
necking in the woods. Is that what you said?
We won't be necking in the woods.
Another reality show, huh?
Yeah.
Naked
and afraid.
Oh, yeah.
We watched that over the weekend, believe
it
or not.
Did
you? Oh, yeah.
You know,
she was eating the grubs and I couldn't watch. It was just, that was a little too much for me, but she survived and he didn't. I gotta say, she was pretty impressive.
Really?
Yeah.
So
she went the distance. He passed out. He went unconscious and they drug him out
really?
Of there. Yeah. Yeah. And he was fine. You know, he did his whole medical afterwards and he ended up being fine. But, no, when he passed out, they decided that, or he decided that was...
Maybe time was up.
It was time. Yeah, it
gong.
Was time. Yeah.
A little Chuck Berry there. Just
yeah.
Just a big gong and let it go. Jeez. So when we're looking at how money fluctuates or doesn't fluctuate, the cost of money, the regulatory requirements changing, is that something you guys are able to anticipate? Or are the individual banks more the end of the tail of the dog... And you find out about the changes, and then you have to implement relatively in short time whatever the edicts are.
Well, I mean, we always keep our ear to the ground. You know, we always try to stay on top of that information and just see what's out there and, you know, what kind of reports are coming out and what the, you know, what the outlook is and, you know, speculate along those lines. I mean, a good example of that is – is that, you know, it is the bottom of the rate cycle. It's not going down any further. We know that. And it's kind of a given, right?
Yeah,
okay, so we know that. And so on the commercial, one of the differences is that a lot of people don't, because, you know, somebody might say, well, how can I can get a 30-year fixed rate on the residential side, but I can't get a 30-year fixed rate on the commercial side? And the primary difference there is on the residential real estate loan side, even though your servicing may be held to the institution that you get the loan through. So if you came in and you got a residential home loan through Rubic Capital Bank, you'd be looking at a 30-year fixed rate, and rates are pretty phenomenal still. They're very, very, very low. But the reason that we can fix that rate for the full 30 years is because the actual loan itself is sold in the secondary market. So it doesn't stay on the bank's balance sheet. The servicing part of it we take care of, but the actual loan itself is sold in the secondary market. Therefore, we can get you that 30-year fixed rate. On the commercial side and the consumer loans, those are all portfolioed, meaning those stay on the bank's books. And so on commercial loans and consumer loans as well, we usually aren't going to want to go out longer than maybe a 5-year fix. And for that reason alone, if we were at the higher end, then, you know, we'd probably be looking at maybe a 7 to 10 year. We'd be fine with that, because if rates are going to go down prospectively, then, you know, we would have that interest rate risk built into it. But when you're at the bottom of the rate cycle, you know, you really have to keep your eye on those things. So, yeah, we definitely talk about that a lot. We plan for it. You know, we try to be as proactive as we can.
KINS News and Information Times, 3:30.
The flame of learning is lit daily at St. Bernard's.
St. Bernard's has openings for new children in our preschool and pre-kindergarten classes. Hi, I'm David Sharp, president of St. Bernard's Catholic School. St. Bernard's Early Childhood Education Center, license number 12540-2277, offers preschool and pre-kindergarten. We're open year-round from 7:30 a.m. to 5 p.m. Call us at 443-7705 to schedule a visit.
St. Bernard's High School and Elementary School, making a difference in lives for today and tomorrow.
Good afternoon, KINS News and Information Time. It's 3:36. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Jennifer Budwig from Redwood Capital Bank. Jennifer, what's the biggest surprise people have about trying to get either a residential loan right now?
One of the biggest surprises. I think maybe anybody that got a loan during the day when the underwriting got very, very, very liberal. It was much easier at that point in time to get a loan. I mean, they did everything from stated income loans, meaning you didn't have to show any form or verification of income, to 105% financing. So basically, not only did they not require any down payment, but you got cash back when you closed.
Now, who in their right mind would think that that is a solid approach?
Our government. I mean,
were people coming in with that preconceived thought that they would walk out with money and could say, well, yeah, I got a job, and not have to prove it?
Well, I don't think that that was the norm, but what ended up happening was it was a progression. You know, so it went from your typical, okay, you need to have 20% down to buy a house. And then pretty soon it's like, okay, now it's 10% down. And then pretty soon it's like, okay, well, we'll do 100% financing. And so it was just
FHA,
over time.
FHA was there, or traditional lending institutions were that way?
Well, the traditional lending institutions, but all based on the underwriting criteria and requirements through Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. And so it was the Fannie and Freddie underwriting criteria, which is who banks and mortgage companies do their loans through. They were the ones who loosened all of the criteria.
Now, is that why the value of residences in Humboldt County got as high as it did? Is because everybody could afford it?
I think that played into it a little bit, you know, because people that couldn't maybe qualify before or didn't have the abilities to maybe come up with 20% down, now all of a sudden didn't have to.
Yeah, unreal demand.
But yeah. And it backfired. I mean, there's a lot of people who, you know, that I wouldn't say a lot of people, but there's definitely people that I've talked to who realized after the fact they just could not afford the house. You know, it was just too much for them, and they didn't take everything into consideration, like, you know, taxes and insurance and, you know, what that monthly nut was really going to end up being in comparison to what their income was. And so I think what happened was then at that point, you know, we went through kind of the whole financial meltdown, and the pendulum swung the other direction and it got tightened up again. And so now I would say the underwriting criteria is really kind of back to where it had been prior to that. And it's a good thing. I mean, there, I think that the standards, it's important that they are in place, because I mean, we don't want to make a loan to somebody who's not going to be able to pay it back. And I don't think anyone wants to undertake a loan that they're not going to be able to pay either. And so, you know, so they're kind of back to the traditional. And so I think that anyone who maybe came in 7-8 years ago and got a loan, or 9 years ago, whatever that was, when we were starting to see that really liberal swing, you know, walked in and it was much simpler. But now if you were to walk in today and try to get the same loan, it's going to be a little bit more of a challenging process. You're going to have to, provide all your verification of income. You're going to have to, you know, there's a lot of documentation that's required.
Is there more available credit today than there was?
I think there's certain programs out there that maybe have allowed that to a degree. But the good thing is I don't think that there are programs that are implemented that are going to put someone in a situation where they can't pay it back. I mean, I would say that underwriting across the board, I think has, you know, become prudent again and smart. You know, and so the that's what underwriting's all about, is to really determine, you know, are we going to make this loan to somebody under the pretense that they can pay it back? You know, because a bank doesn't ever want to own a home. I mean, we don't want to own a property. We don't want to. That's obviously the last resort is foreclosure, and that doesn't, nobody wins in that situation. And so the goal is to make smart loans. And so I would say that underwriting is kind of back to a level where it should be, you know, both on the business/commercial side and the residential side.
Is credit accessible?
I think so. Yeah, I
so
do.
So the hoops aren't too tough?
I don't think so. I mean, there's going to be occasions where it can be challenging. But, you know, if you were to come into Rebecca Capital Bank and apply for a business loan, what we typically are going to do is look at it from a conventional standpoint and say, okay, do you qualify just based on what our typical underwriting criteria requirements are? And if you do, then we would make the loan that way. If you don't, then our next step is probably going to be to see if we can do something on the SBA side. And so what that typically is going to look like is we'd make the loan, but SBA comes in with a guarantee, or there's a couple other programs through SBA that we might explore. And in those scenarios, that that doesn't necessarily, it benefits the customer sometimes, because as an example, on an SBA loan, maybe you're buying a piece of equipment, we can go a 10-year term. Versus if we just go conventional, it'd be a 5-year term. So there are some benefits to being able to go SBA, but for the most part, it's just going to be kind of that added layer of protection to the bank. So, but what it does is it allows us to make loans maybe we couldn't otherwise. And so, and then if we can't do something on the SBA side, then typically we're going to be able to refer them to either REDEC, which is a Redwood Regional Economic Development Commission, or AEDC, which is Arcadia Economic Development Corp. So we can typically refer them to one of those two places for additional assistance. And I would say on the residential side, you know, that might be the case to a degree, as far as there's alternatives. You know, so if you really have a sound borrower, but there's something quirky about, you know, maybe their credit's not just perfect, or maybe the property's got some tweaks to it that it's doesn't, you know, meet the standard typical type of a loan that fits in the box, you know, then. And that's one of the benefits. Like at Redwood, we if we can't get it to go Fannie Mae, so to speak, sold in the secondary market, then we can look at portfolio and the loan. So we do have occasions where the property doesn't meet their criteria, so we can still portfolio it, which still allows the borrower to get into it, but it's just not going to have that favorable pricing we were just talking about a little while ago.
KINS, News and Information Times, 343. We'll be back with more from Jennifer Budwig.
What's the shopping show all about?
If you haven't listened to the show before, it's kind of tough to describe.
I guess the easiest first step is to simply go to the Shopping Show website.
TheShoppingShow.net.
And join us this Saturday for the next Shopping Show.
On KINS 106.3 FM.
KURY FM 95.3 and 101.3 in the Illinois Valley.
And KEKA 101.5 and 100.9 in Eureka.
Good afternoon, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 3:45. We're back to Talk Shop this afternoon with Jennifer Budwig. Jennifer, what is the biggest surprise people have, not inside the institution, but the regular guy, in a loan determination?
In a loan determination?
Yeah, whether it's thumbs up or thumbs down. Uh-huh. What is the thing that those of us on the outside go, really? That's why I got or didn't get?
Mm-hmm.
Really? That's the reason?
Mm-hmm.
What would that be?
Well, the main things we're going to be looking at would be, you know, income. We're going to be looking at credit. We're going to be looking at loan to value, depending upon what it is that you're buying. You know, so if you're buying a commercial piece of property, you know, we typically want 25% down kind of a thing. So I think that your initial conversation with the loan officer you're working with, those things are usually going to be talked about. If they're not discussed or you don't know really what to expect through the process, I mean, it could be very different just depending on how all of that works.
Just familiarity with the process?
Yeah, I think that's a big piece of it. I mean, that's, we try to be really thorough in terms of, you know, this is what you should expect and lay out proper time frames and how we look at things and that kind of thing. I think that more than anything, I would say that the surprises come when we maybe have like a really complex borrower. You know, maybe they've got multiple entities. So they got, you know, a couple corporations, an LLC over here, a partnership. They've got, and it's kind of like pin and jello to the wall to try to truly understand what their financial picture looks like, you know, because they may be taking money from one corporation, putting it into another corporation. And then, you know, are we looking at draws and capital contributions in comparison to taking that bottom line partner income and moving that over to their personal return? It kind of goes on and on. So I think that we've got situations where, I would say those would be the surprises, is borrowers who, they're very, very complex, so it can be really challenging trying to sort through their, really getting your arms around how their financial picture really looks. And unfortunately, unfortunately, you know, we are very heavily regulated, as you can imagine. And so we have to kind of look at loans the same. We can't say, okay, we're going to look at it this way for Susie, but we're going to look at it this way for Joni. You have to look at them the same. And so if we have a really
now, is that a standard that it's measured against, or is that consistency of determination with certain variables being in the same range?
What do you mean?
When the regulators are looking for consistency.
Oh, yeah. No, they're going to be looking at that to make sure that, and there's two elements to that. One is they want to make sure that there's no prejudices or biases in our lending, you know, so that there's no discrimination is prevalent. But also just to make sure we're consistent. And it's kind of interesting because the Fannie Mae world, they look at things in a very specific manner, you know, from an underwriting standpoint. It's very box-oriented. And consumer is kind of too. Commercial, we have a little bit more flexibility. But also the commercial loans are typically going to be a little more complex. And so, you know, so, I mean, we've got, that's what our underwriters do. You know, I mean, that's, they take all that information that we compile and they have to sort through all of it and to really try to make sure that we have a full understanding of their overall cash flow position. So it's not just strictly income. It's like, what's your cash flow look like to pay your bills back? You know, so there's a lot that goes into that, you know, to really making that determination. And so, you know, and that can be really hard too. I mean, how much of it do we look at using projected income versus historical? You know, so you might have somebody who's buying a investment property and so they're going to have income coming from that. And, you know, so there's just a lot of pieces that go into it. And so you might have somebody who feels like, you know, we can pay our bills, you know, our credit report looks really, really good and we don't have any problems with that. And, you know, but maybe as an example, they had a huge capital gain last year, but we have to pull that out because it's non-recurring income. And so even though, yeah, last year they did have a really big capital gain, so they had a huge amount of cash sitting in the bank, but it's non-recurring, so we can't include it. So maybe all of a sudden we have to decline someone because of the non-recurring income. And so that can be hard for a borrower to understand, which I get that. I mean, that makes sense as to why it would be hard to get that.
Oh, the simplicity just continues.
Yeah. Thanks. Aren't you glad you asked?
Oh, terribly so, because we're only 5 seconds from saying goodbye.
Shoot.
Join us tomorrow afternoon for more Talk Shop. Till then, go out and make it a good day. Hugs, and we'll see you tomorrow.